Hey guys, thanks for coming. Hi, I see so many friends. So I'm so happy to welcome you. This is our first salon series. I'm Elena Frampton, for those who don't know me. We have an interior design studio of 12 people. We also have a unique in-house art advisory division. This is what sort of stands us apart. And we opened this space exhibition to showcase our creative and curatorial ideas and essentially connect with people. I'm constantly looking for a deeper conversation. I'm sort of hungry for something beyond the superficial snapshot and the sort of celebrity craze images in our media. And I'm also looking for the process of discovery and to be surprised. And I think that's my favorite thing and why these gentlemen are here with us tonight is because they both surprise me, which doesn't happen very often. So please welcome Fernando and Nick. If you guys can tell us a little bit about yourselves. Get the ball started.
All right. So I'm Fernando Mastrangelo. I have a studio in Brooklyn for the last 6 years, but I was born in the United States. I grew up in Mexico, so that's been a big influence in my work. And then I studied sculpture at VCU, Virginia Commonwealth, in Virginia. That's where I got my master's. And then I moved to New York in 2004. And I worked for Matthew Barney, which was a big deal for me at the time. He's a really well-known sculptor, artist. And it also had a big influence on my work. And then in 2006, I sold my first sculpture from a solo show. And ever since then, I've been making sculpture full-time. And then in 2014, I started a furniture line. And that's when my career kind of exploded. And probably why I'm here now talking to you guys.
We'll get into that.
Hi, I'm Nick Missel. I was born in St. Louis, and then I got my undergrad at the KCA Art Institute, and then I got my master's at RISD. And I did sculpture for undergrad and my master's, and that was really actually kind of really what shaped me. Yeah, that was a really good time. So right after grad school, I did Skowhegan, and that's actually where I discovered the silicone series. We can get into that later. And then I moved to New York. I was there for 3 years. Worked with Fernando for a year. Good times. And then, I actually just moved my studio to Philadelphia, and I've been there for coming up on a year. So that's a little bit about me.
So growing up, at what point did you figure out the creative life is for me? Or at what point did you figure out that you had a different type of observation of things?
I think that was kind of a constant thing for me. Everyone kept telling me, like, no, you should do business, like, don't do art. And I was like, no, this is what I want to do. So it was kind of like throughout my entire life that it was pretty present. So
I was like, I didn't really make art as a kid. I started drawing when I was 14. And it was because I just realized that all of a sudden I could, like, draw the figure well. And so then I started drawing comics. And then I found the work of Salvador Dali, which I think a lot of young people do. And then all of a sudden I was like, this is what I want to do. I didn't really understand the logistics of what an art career was. And I just saw Dali as this sort of, you know, it's like crazy figure, eccentric dude who just, you know, went to his subconscious to find work. And so anyway, I found that really like an interesting lifestyle, I guess. And I had this weird talent to be able to draw. So I thought, well, I can probably do this. And then, you know, I think then the logistics of becoming an artist unfold from there for me.
And is there any sort of nostalgic situation or anything that informs some decisions today? So I tell the story in the studio a lot that red is the color that I avoid because my mother used to dress me in red all the time when I was a kid, so I can't look at it. And it's only been recently that through appreciating certain artworks that I've been able to incorporate red in my work because of that. Do you have any like weird little thing that like informs your decision making or...
Nick?
Yeah, so when I was younger, I actually, this is strange, I used to really enjoy going through dumpsters. It just kind of like became a thing, and so I would always like, we lived in an apartment, and so every week I would be like, what are people throwing out? And it was really interesting, kind of like understanding like, oh, this is waste, but like it's something I'm going to like take and then use, and obviously kind of translate into what I'm doing now.
You know, this is funny that you asked me this question because I've actually been thinking about this lately. Like, why do I work with sand so much?
And I was going to ask you that. So
yeah, and it's kind of like I love the material. And, you know, when I was a kid, we used to go to Sanibel Island in Florida with my mom. And I just remember, and I think that this is part, like now that I'm able to have a little time to reflect on my work, I'm then trying to make like correlations with when I was young. I was like, oh, maybe that's why I like this so much. And so I think those moments of being at that beach as the sun was setting, it's in Florida, it's really beautiful, I think that that had an impact on me. And then, I don't know, I'm sort of trying to transform those moments into works of art today.
So let's talk about the sand since you brought it up. I don't know that people understand that you're actually making with your hands and with, like, I don't think people understand. If you can talk about your process a little bit.
So as a conceptual tool, I use materials like sand, salt. Those are common in my practice. And then I sort of form them and compress them into sculptures, furniture, wall works. And so with a combination of resin and whatever the material may be, sand a lot of times, we're able to manipulate and move the material and compress it into molds and make it into almost like a stone. So it's almost like you're creating marble in some way. You know, you really dictate what, or like a travertine, but in a real time, like you're actually making the stuff. And for me, it was like it's a way for my work to have content in it. You know, so I use a material to give the work meaning, you know? So it's not just like, well, what's your relationship to a piece of wood? Well, I don't know, you know what I mean? Like, I don't really have a lot. So I relate more to this other material, yeah. And so I try to use that in the work to give it meaning.
But you talk about sort of like in your writing, you talk about like, you reference landscape and earth and like, are these, you know, conceptual drivers? Is this something more?
I mean, guys, we're facing climate change, and I don't think that I have, in my practice, like, I don't really have much else important to talk about besides the things that are going on in our culture right now. And I've been making work about climate change for so long now that it feels like, I'm like, yeah, guys, this is for real, and so there's real impact, and so my work has been so much about the earth and, you know, the changes that are going on, because that's like, it's bigger than me. Like, what am I going to do? Tell you guys, like, you know, express my, like, you know, like my personal deep feelings about my own psyche. Like, I don't find that to be interesting. I rather speak in this language that is kind of more universal and that everyone can understand. And then we can have a conversation. And so, yeah, that's why I focus so much on, it's like, you know, if I have a voice, like, at least I'll talk about something that's relevant to what's going on with us. Yeah.
So sand is to Fernando as silicone is to Nick.
I feel like the silicone for me is, it's something that I kind of stumbled upon. And so while I was at Skowhegan, I was trying to, so for one, I have like a 1986 Chevy and the engine blew up and I was like, what am I going to do with this thing? And so I actually took the engine back. I stripped the whole thing apart. And I'm like, I'm going to cast the core of the engine, thinking about like, oh, like old American, like masculinity, like redefining that and like how everything's changing currently for the better, in my opinion. And then I'm like rushing to make a mold and I like get the silicone on there. You have to make a mother mold to kind of hold the rubber in place. And then I'm rushing the whole thing for a critique the next day, and it fails because I rush it. And so I'm peeling the silicone, and the whole thing like kind of inverts and pops inside out. And I just kind of look at it. I was like, oh, this is a great opportunity. And that was the beginning of the inverted series of works. And then it kind of, then I did.
Can I just say something about about the work, about the inverted? Okay. When you're when you're in the process of making sculpture, you use silicone mold making quite a bit to achieve your forms, right? So it's not often that you think of silicone as the final object, as the final material, right? It's a process. And so what he's discovered is this, you know, the process can reveal to have like these beautiful, you know, qualities to it. Like you can see the bench in the back, you know. So it's like art about process, you know what I mean? And so, and the material just becomes this like residue of that process, which is really cool, I think.
So can we talk about what comes first, like the form, how do you decide what that is? And maybe if we can touch a little on the notion of art versus furniture and what that's about.
Yeah, so for me, I mean, really the idea comes first. And so I was interested in global economics and recycling and kind of like, I was getting into like anthropocentric and dystopian philosophy. And that was really kind of like the thing that was like driving like all of my decisions for like what I was doing. And then, yeah, I mean, I guess that's, it, yeah, it just starts with the idea. And so the types of works that I've made, they range in material from like, you know, foam to concrete to like plexiglass, but then the rubber kind of felt like there's something fresh about it that I hadn't seen before, and so now I'm continuing. But yeah, it started with the idea, and then all the other choices were contingent upon that. So
it's totally fresh and not seen before. I mean, we see in the studio, we see a lot of work, and I wanted to touch on your like job as a curator, basically, and your two seasons as the In Good Company.
Three seasons.
Yeah, three?
Yeah, we did three.
and sort of the difference between, you know, you're a creator yourself, you're a designer, and then you, like, what gave you the idea to do this?
Well, similar to what you're doing here, you know, you're trying to create connection with people, you know, and so In Good Company, we have it's a nonprofit organization where we give emerging designers a platform. Nick was actually won the first year award. Winston Cuevas is here. He was in our show this year as well. So, like, we have, it's kind of like alumni base of these artists, but basically it's a platform, right? Super hard to get your work seen these days. You know, they're better, you know, now we have the internet and Instagram that really helps, but galleries is tricky, you know, the market's not quite there yet. So we did it to give people a platform. And honestly, it's like, I love collect, I'm passionate about emerging design. So, you know, I've got my eyes out. And I think it's also cool because we're such an early stage of collectible design that it's exciting that I may get some early works from people that may become historical artists or historical designers, because now the fusion of art and design is blurred, it's gone, right? And so it's cool. I think it's like,
why isn't the market there yet, do you think? I mean, everybody loves new. Everybody wants new.
No, it's because there's no resale value. That's why. So the auction markets are the only reason that the art market has thrived, right? So the collectible design has not reached Christie's and Sotheby's yet. Once that marketplace starts to get activated, you'll start to see collectible design just skyrocket. It's because, simple economics, I think. I mean, it is. It's like, you know, the art market, the art market's now considered an asset class, right? And so people are investing, and you can see the upsides. Look, furniture isn't there yet because, you know, we're just starting to see it become, you know, art in a lot of ways, in a bigger way.
So when you're designing, let's talk about your mirrors, mm-hmm. right? Because sometimes they're fulfilling a function, sometimes less, right? I don't know. It depends. So when you're designing a mirror, what's that process like? I mean, are you designing an artwork for the wall?
Yes. There are definitely artworks. I mean, You know, I make several series of mirrors now, but probably the most recognizable is the Drift mirror, which is a classic sort of sand mirror with a sort of stroke. And the inspiration was I went to Patagonia. I had a really moving experience with the glaciers melting there. I wanted to commemorate that with some sort of design piece. So the piece has concept and all this stuff, but it also has functionality. Like, I do want that line to still be there where, you know, you can use it as a full-length mirror, you know what I mean? So, but it has this very beautiful gesture to it, too.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk about furniture versus art? And when you were in school, it was mostly, was it functional sculpture? Was it, how would you describe it?
I actually taught a class during winter session, which was about sculpture and furniture, and blanking on the name of it. Anyway, it kind of like pulls from like a Franz Westian like idea of like how does like your body interact with a thing, and like, you know, keep it like really basic, not try to be like, oh, it needs to be ergonomic and like fit within these parameters. And so I guess I don't like seeing them as like separate things. It's kind of like you can make sculpture that can fulfill the parameters of furniture. And I feel like the parameters are like you're having like an intimate experience with it in some way. Yeah.
And have you navigated custom commissions yet?
No.
Get ready.
Not yet.
Yeah, get ready. Well, because I'm curious about custom commissions and sort of what that dynamic becomes when there's a very specific client that comes into play and says, I need something this big to fulfill this specific function, and, you know, how you would sort of go about the creative aspect within sort of what could be tight parameters. I mean, we navigate this all the time.
I feel like we kind of did that. So I have work up at ADO, and it had to be a chandelier, and you know, they gave us a mood board with colors and everything and references. So there was some tailoring. So I think it can work.
I mean, you know, custom commissions are a big function of a studio a lot of times. And look, I think that as a designer, if you establish your voice and you establish what you do, people won't ask you to push too far out of your bounds, because they're coming to you for that thing that you do well or that they really like. And so I feel like that's been my experience. I think that I don't think everyone's experienced that, and there are definitely times where I've had to, like, you know, adjust. But I also, you know, give back. Like, I'll push back now more these days, and really, if I stand behind my vision for something, you know, I mean, I will give a little bit of pushback more than I would have maybe 5 years ago, for sure. You know, so you kind of learn, you know, like, I don't know, it's just the balance. You got to just juggle it, you know, kind of work with the commission, work with people, try to get them to see what might be cooler, you know.
Do you find people, I mean, they're coming to you because they want something, but if there is pushback, is it coming from, like, fear of the unknown? Where do you think it's coming from?
Yeah, I think, yes. Yeah, you can tell, you know. I'm so used to the process of not knowing what I'm going to get. Like, I'm very cool with custom commissions. Like, you know, I'm like, I mean, if I am purchasing one or trying to get one, I'm like, because I'm open, because I'm like, ah. Oh. But I understand, you know, wanting to control a little bit and saying, like, well, it doesn't go perfectly with this, or it's not how I saw the photo of it. I get it, because once you're around clients enough, you get that that's just, you know, kind of like what people's imagination is what they see, you know.
Well, it's this contradiction that we see on a weekly basis, where it's, we want something new, we're considering something innovative. Mm-hmm. let me look on my Pinterest board and see if there's an example of it that's been done before, because right, then I'd feel better if I knew someone else did it. So there is a little bit of a contradiction, I think, in the desire for design, in that, like, no matter how great the rendering is, or no matter how great that walkthrough is, it's like, it can be a little scary. So I guess I'm just curious how you go through that process when, you know, navigating that, or, you know, how to handle those kind of situations.
Well, most of the time we try to be very polite all the time. you know, and try to empathize with what they're experiencing, you know, and then try to usually find a nice balance of where it's not costing the studio, you know, an arm and a leg, and where, you know, where we find a good balance. You know, it happened to me with a major designer on the West Coast, and, you know, we had, you know, and it was like, tough. It was very tough.
Like creative,
and we tried
creative differences.
No, like just, you know, something went wrong. You know, and with the order or with this or that, and you just have to navigate. Like they commissioned works,
right. So
that
like
failed.
the production of the item, not like damage in delivery or something.
Okay. No. It was total failure of our, unfortunately. You know, and it was a learning curve, and that you know, and maybe, you know, I went a little too far, being like, yes, I think this is possible. You know, and. Mm. They commissioned it. It was not inexpensive. And so, you know, at the end of the day, it failed. And so we had to take responsibility for that. But how do you figure it out? Because, like, as a small studio, to take a, you know, it's a tough to take a hit like that sometimes.
What about, like, the idea of, like, an R&D fee and then see what happens? I don't know. Are people that cool? That
R&D
they would,
fee?
Like a research and development fee. Like, rather than... You know, if it works, the cost will be this.
We've done that, and that's actually that worked really well on a major, major project. We started with you know, like a major sample,
right?
And then we were able to work out kinks. Yeah, that's always a great.
Because that's what most people don't understand behind the process. That everybody sort of sees these beautiful finished photographs,
right?
And they don't know this whole. Process. Actually, two things I learned before we started tonight, which I didn't know, is that both of you have just moved studios.
Yes.
So if you can talk about maybe like why and what that experience has been like, and maybe if it's changed the work at all.
Yeah. So Philadelphia is it's different from New York. we'll put it that way. It's been really good for me, though, because I've actually mostly, I go down there, and I actually don't leave the studio. I live in the studio currently, and so I'm just working from when I wake up until I go to bed, and there'll be 3-4 days where I won't open the front door, and it's great, though. You know, you're getting fully invested in what you're doing, and, like, you know, you go, like, a little crazy at times, but, like, you're so, like, into what you're doing where you're just like, oh, like, I'm discovering new things.
So when you were working in New York, what was your sort of day like, or how was it?
Yeah.
You wouldn't lock in for 4 days? Or?
Yeah, no, I couldn't do that. I was working a full-time job and then doing freelance jobs on the side to make enough money to afford the studio that was $2,000. When you're making like $4,000 a month, you're like, Jesus, what am I doing? So I kind of was just hitting my head against the wall repeatedly, and the opportunity is where I found... where I was really making work. I did work for Socrates Sculpture Park in 2018, and I actually went up to Vermont to cast a tractor. And so getting out of the city ended up being more beneficial to me than trying to, like, be here to make work. And I realized New York was really about, like, meeting people, and that was what was so great about it. So, yeah. But Philadelphia has been really great for production.
Me and my girlfriend just moved to Bovina, New York, which is 3 hours north in the Catskills. And, you know, I've gone pretty good, pretty long, pretty hard. Like, I've been 22 years I've been making sculpture, and really, like, the last decade, I have not stopped. And so kind of reached this point where I thought, you know what, like, 2020 could be a good time to, like, re-inspire myself after I've built a machine of making things, you know, and I'm really proud of the studio that I was able to build. And so now I just want to just get back to being an artist again, and that's what I'm doing. And so I'm going to build a studio on the property upstate, and we're going to install Tiny House, which is this project in Times Square last year. And create a sort of an experiential space and place where people can come and visit the studio, maybe even stay on the land. And I'm trying to sort of expand my creativity and outside of just, you know, making a painting or a sculpture or a piece of furniture. And so, you know, I'm treating the house as a sculpture. I'm gonna go room by room, space by space, and really make a sculptural interior and use you know, like I don't have any of my work in my home, and this is now a time to see how I would live with my own work and all the other works that I have from IGC people. You know, we have an amazing collection going on. So, like that right now is that's what I'm doing to feel re-inspired, and we figured out a way to keep the operation in the city going, which is difficult and interesting and complex as a business, while being able to be upstate, get space, clear your mind. I think we all need to clear our minds, you know?
Well, I mean, I think that's a common struggle for a lot of people who are taking the creative path, is how to be creatively fulfilled, how to operate a business or navigate your life, and how to keep that going. And I think it's juggling a lot. So I'm intrigued by the change and the moves and how that's going to go.
Yeah, look, there's a point where if you design your life the right way, or start to like design it in the way, you can have all the things that you kind of want. You know, like you. I was running the studio at the way that I was running it, at the pace that I was running it. It's awesome. I mean, we're cranking, but I don't want to just be running a good business that is of art. You know, like I want to continue to, and my work's all about nature, and now I live in a place where I wake up every morning and I see mountains, and I'm like, fuck, yeah, like I don't know what my next collection's going to be or what it's going to look like, and I think that's the path. You know, like if you can get to this point where you don't have to like struggle every minute to like, you know, pay your rent and all that stuff, like start living life, get out there, and, you know, and start to be re-inspired again.
Or lock yourself in the studio.
Same thing.
Either way.
Yeah.
Either way, something can happen, right? So, Nick, can you talk about in the creative process, like, are you drawing? Are you building models? Are you, like, how is this happening? Or are you just, like, making the, going in?
I like writing.
Writing?
Yeah. So, yeah, I think about an idea, and then I sit down and I write about it, and then I start making.
How are you translating the words? So, like, you're talking about an idea. How do we end up with a bench? Yeah. Like, how did that happen? And just with the bench, when did the color come into play? Is that a natural part of, like, the pro? Like, yeah, when does the color come in?
So, I guess first it started with walking, and so I would be walking around New York, and I was like, oh wow, there are all these like bales of cardboard everywhere. And I was like, this is interesting. I was like, why do I love this object for some reason? So I was immediately drawn to that because I thought they were beautiful, and then I was like, I'm gonna use this for something. And then I was writing, and I was like, oh, the bale fits in perfectly with that kind of like anthropocentric like writing that I was doing. And then the silicone, I was like, oh, let's just go ahead and kind of like see, because that was like at a point where I'd been like pushing that type of work and like doing the development of making sure that it's not going to rip, make sure it's not going to fail, how do I get color gradients to actually like work. And so this was the piece where like everything that like I learned over the past couple of years kind of like came together. The color specifically, I think that kind of comes back to the whole like working in the studio and staying up late. So there was a moment where like I was waking up at like 4 p.m. and going to bed at like 9 or 10 a.m. And so everything became inverted, where like sunrises were my sunsets for a while. It just kind of happened that way. And so I was always like working in my studio is on the fifth floor, and I get to see like the sunrise and sunset and the horizon. And so there was a lot of just kind of looking out the window whenever those moments would happen. I would like stop working and just be like, oh, this is nice. I'm going to take it in. And so, you know, that kind of like twilight. Actually, I was on the roof earlier, and that twilight moment, I was like, there it is. So, yeah.
I mean, you get that. I think you get that sense from looking at the work.
Yeah.
What about, so in terms of like market viability and designing and making things that will sell, do you think about the location of where something's going to end up, or is it, you don't go that far? Like, do you think about where it might be or the placement of something, or?
No.
No, I don't think many artists would.
Somewhere beautiful. That someone's going to enjoy it.
Well, I mean, how do we talk about beauty then? How do we talk about notions of beauty and what's beautiful and?
How do we talk about it?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know.
I mean, and things transform when someone pointed out seeing the bench on the rug. It was a completely different experience than seeing it in the gallery space. And how the work itself is completely transformed. So that to me was fascinating because our job is to have the vision for, you know, composition, right? So I'm just so curious if, you know, you're thinking about it in such a different way, I guess.
Yeah, I've been wondering about my relationship with beauty. No, I have, because I think that I try to make things that are beautiful all the time. Like, everything I make, I try to... Like, that's kind of at the forefront of my thinking. And I'm not sure, you know, I think maybe I've been able to capture some sort of universal beauty language, it's, you know, in some way. Like, no one's really too opposed to, you know, like, soft gradients and, you know, like, really, you know what I mean? And I think that, like, in a weird way... the work was able to take what is like sort of occurring in nature and been able to kind of put it in there. And so I think I relate beauty to what's going on in nature and then try to translate that and transform it into works of art, because I know that that's beautiful. You know, when I'm sitting there looking out at a mountainscape or something, or a pond or whatever, like that's beautiful, it's moving, you know? And so I just rely on nature for all my cues on beauty. And then I steal.
I mean, I think...
You know what I mean?
I mean, I don't... Design, like, when is design controversial? Design is controversial when it's, like, too evocative of a certain era and someone didn't like that era, I feel like. Or if the color green seems to be an issue for like everybody. I don't know what the problem is, but yeah, green is a major problem. Becomes a controversial strategy.
Wait, you're asking when it becomes a controversial strategy? Huh. You're faced with that a lot more than I think we are. No, I think so. I think that... Yeah, people are approaching, they're coming to me for, you know, very specific recipes, I think, of things. And so I think, if anything, it's my prices are controversial more than anything else. You know, I think that, you know, I think that that's what maybe we always have to kind of discuss is why, you know, things are painstakingly made sometimes for a very, you know, like we have a drum that's just all white cement, but the labor it takes to get to that just simplicity, I think that's part of what we're always kind of faced with, is educating people on that and why that's beautiful or why, you know.
The value of it, especially if you're making something that hasn't been made before, perhaps.
Precisely, yeah.
So you spent 3 years in New York, or 4 years?
Three years, yeah.
And so from when you arrived and when you left, what was your impression of art and design and what you were making? And
Well, I thought I knew a lot more when I moved here. And then you very quickly get beaten down, and you realize that you need to be more humble. And so I feel like I'm a lot more informed now than I was. I don't know. I mean, I feel like it's more informed, but I don't feel like I've had time to really think about it. To be honest, things kind of just kept going. Like, I haven't like stopped to like take a break and say what's actually going on. What have I like really ingested? It's kind of like the experiences are coming in and then they're coming out of my hands, and I'm like, okay, well, it's there. Hasn't sat for long enough.
What's next for you? What's inspiring you right now, and what are you excited to make?
So I actually just found out I'm going to be showing in Milan with Rosanna Orlandi, and so I'm going to be making another iteration of a bench, and We are figuring out what else will go. It's based on shipping.
Another logistic thing.
Right. Yeah. What's next for you?
What's next for me?
Well, I'm building a house upstairs. Not building it, but renovating it. And then, I don't know. Like, you know, we live, so it's this place called Bovina. And I just know this, right? So I'm going to build a studio, and I want to have this large circular window that kind of creates a vignette every season. And I know that I would like to make work from that vignette for each season for a while. You know what I mean? And kind of as, because it radically changes. Like right now it's snowing, and you know, then there'll be a weekend where it's all green. And I sort of want to just like live into that, live in that and see what that feels like and then create new works. I would like to come out with something that's fresh. Not silicone, but you know what I mean? Like, I think after a while, you know, I look at my own portfolio. I really like it. I like the work I make, but I would like to continue to make things that are feel new and feel fresh.
There are probably some emerging designers in the audience tonight. What is your process for In Good Company and for vetting them? And when does that happen?
It happens all year round. You know, we are looking at artists every day, really. You know, people will send DMs. We're really, look, this has been built on a social media campaign, really, and so that's the way we like to interact with people. It's through social media. We want to make sure you have a presence on social media. We want to make sure that you're being professional in that way, that you're using your Instagram as your page that talks about who you are, what your brand is about. Winston does an incredible job of that. So, you know, it's like we're looking there, and I've got my, you know, this is my passion, so I look at everything all the time, and people send me things all the time, email, DM. So, that's the vetting process. Also, I go to all the exhibitions, any kind of, during the fair season, always there. I mean, plus, once you have a group around you of people that are emerging designers, they start introducing you to other emerging designers. And then we'll go do a studio visit and end up in, like, you know, five different studios. And you'll see how people are merging their studios to all work in one space. And you got, like, five creative teams in one space. Cool. So that's the process for IGC, and it's like you'll know. Like if one of us like your work, especially if I like it, I think it's cool. Like you know, we'll pull you in and we'll try to include you in exhibitions. And it's nice. Like now we're being approached about creating exhibitions in other locations. You know, there's something maybe coming up in the Hamptons. So. And we just finished ADO. So there's an exhibition at ADO, guys, in Greenpoint called Glow Up. Nick's work is there. And so the process is send us your stuff. I will look at everything. Everything. I look at every DM, every single...
You have plenty of time in the country.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Plus, like I said, we avidly collect design, so... We're always looking for a young emerging designer at a good price where you're not having to go, like, you know, these crazy prices that some people are asking. So, yeah.
I'm going to open it up to questions. Anybody has any questions?
I would like to know how you met these guys and what exactly the piece was that sort of turned you on.
Funny you should ask. I organized a parish contemporary circle event. For the opening of In Good Company, and that was this summer. I don't remember what
September.
Month. And we had never met before, but I went to the event and
private tour,
you know,
yeah,
VIP.
Yeah.
And actually, when I walked in, Nick's work is the bench that's at the back here tonight, and it was the first thing that I mean. It's a huge space. Mm-hmm. And there, how many works were in that show?
14 works.
Yeah. And that one is just the one that spoke to me the most. I also had a particular client that I felt it was the right match for. So it was, you know, it's a beautiful moment when all those things come together at the right time. I talk about how the idea for exhibition came to be because I was finding so much work, I couldn't possibly place it in all of our projects. It was just too much. So when all the parts come together where it's the right time, the right place, the right project, the right thing, it's very special. So that's how we met. And I actually met Nick tonight. Yes.
Yeah, it was cast from a plastic bale, and then the interior is actually like a fiberglass, like concave section that was spray chromed with like an ombre red to gold.
So I'm very curious, if, like, Elena brought up controversial, and we can think about controversial in terms of like the market and mm-hmm. market value, and like making a chandelier that has any sort of aesthetic similarity to that. Like, that just blows my mind, and that's on you now, but plug it. But like, what? So you didn't consider the market at all? You were just like chandeliers.
No.
Most
of my decisions are mostly based on thinking about like what kind of experience a person could have with the work, and so I guess I'm trying to really, if I'm thinking about myself as a designer, I'm trying to design an experience more than anything, and that's where the materials come into play. So even on the surface, where like when you go see it, it's not like a perfect chrome surface where it's perfectly reflective. I actually did like a heavy overspray so that, because I was thinking about like, you know, like looking at a sunset and like seeing all the smog and how everything kind of like gets like pixelated in a way. I was like, oh, this would be nice. Kind of like, let's see if I can try to simulate that with chrome and, you know, go from there. So
you can't think about where something's going to live or who's going to buy it. I think that really quickly limits creativity, very quickly. You know, you want to. You know, in 2006 when I did that solo show, I built a 27-foot sculpture, my first solo show, 27-foot sculpture with a pond of oil, black oil. Okay, like, and, you know, it was like weird. And sugar. And so, yeah. And everyone was like, dude, don't do that. Like, you know, make, you know, wall pieces, some smaller things that a wide variety of collectors can buy. And I was like, nah, you know what I mean? And so I did that, and the piece sold to a massive collector in Texas. And that move to not try to be what the market wants or what you think the market wants, you know, and that big, weird silicone sun object thing has impact because of that, you know? Because if you're trying to fit it into the right dimensions for the right, well, how do we get it into the space? You'll never follow your passion.
It's a major pitfall, I think, especially if you're looking to communicate an original voice. Mm-hmm. And I think, I mean, when I'm working with the team, I'm always asking for a wild card. Like, what's the thing that they're going to absolutely say no to? What's the thing that they did not ask for? And let's push it and let's try. Even if it's just for our own you know, design muscles, even if it's just keeping that working. And I have to say, when the clients have said, oh, you're crazy, let's do it, fine. it's their favorite element,
yeah,
for sure. When they say, let's do it, it's their favorite element. And it's not something that any of their friends have.
Right.
And it's not something else they're ever going to see. So it's kind of worth it. I sort of present it as, okay, this is crazy, but this is what we were thinking. Or this kept me up last night. And if they know it, it means something. They'll listen, hopefully. Yes.
I'm actually interested in how you do present. When you say, you know, this is crazy, what do you think?
Yeah.
Because you obviously have an idea of what would be great, but your client doesn't always have that idea. Yeah.
Right. I mean, I think I sort of say that it's important to do the logistics really well. So, like, something super basic as really good drawings, really good material, like, have the basics done really well. And then I think that you have a stronger position to say, Well, what I usually say is I wouldn't be doing my job if I didn't share the wild card option with you. And I know you're going to think it's too much, and but that's why you called me. So I usually, but it's like we put together very comprehensive presentations that are super tight. I mean, it's one thing if you're just a mess and unprepared, right? If you're super tight, you have everything, and also if you've rendered it in the different ways, and if you've shown them the view that they asked for. So if someone asks for something, I always do it, but I also put forth our idea that's a little strange too, so that they feel heard and validated. Yes. I mean, I try, listen, we have the same principles regardless of the situation. So we might have something, and we were talking about it before, and this kind of goes back to how do you operate a business and live a fulfilling life, and how does that all go together? We'll get calls from past clients for maybe an unglamorous job, you know, renovate this, I don't know, something that's like kind of small, and we always work with past clients we've had good relationships with. And it's the same thing. Even if we don't have the opportunity to buy a Nick bench, we'll still come up with something kind of crazy. So, and I might even use Nick's bench as the inspiration. And that might be on the pinup board. And then my project manager is going to say, what are you doing? And I'll say, but see how the color goes from this like pink to this lavender, and it kind of changes. Maybe that's the tile, and it goes from the wall to the ceiling or something. So it's like, it's the same principles. It's the same strategies. It's just like, it just manifests in a different way. But we'll still show the option with like the gray-blue tile that looks very tailored and smart, and we'll see. Yes.
Thank you so much for sharing that success and the work you do. I really, the question is more along the lines of how you select your materials to, because it sounds like you are obviously aware of like the environmental impacts of producing things.
Yeah.
You know, I was listening to a podcast the other day about this, and but talking about the art world, you know, we leaving quite a bit of a carbon footprint. You know, the traveling, especially. It's a tough question because I've always balanced that because my work's a lot about this. And you think, well, is my voice and what I'm saying reaching more people than the impact that I'm having if I have to use resin to create my works, right? And my hope is that the world starts to switch, and once we become all electric, that you know some of these products it won't have such a massive impact on the environment, right? And so that, all right. So you balance out the voice I have and the thing I can get out there and the press I can get about this and the ideas that I can put out into the world. Does that have more impact right now, or should I try to figure out how to make my studio 100% sustainable, which we would love to do? But that's kind of the conversation that I'm constantly having. And so you're like, well, that's the conversation constantly. When we created Tiny House for Times Square, we made it out of recycled glass. And it's this idea of upcycling materials, right? This is a material that can be destroyed again, repulverized, and recast. And so that was my first sort of like, this is what I can contribute conceptually or even with the materials that we're using. So we used a recycled glass to create it. And then in this idea that in the future, maybe that's the way we can build and then disassemble that thing and recrush it and reuse it. And so it's the start and the thinking behind, if that put into the right hands, that could possibly become and so it's an exploration and trying to, contribute in some way. And then, yeah. But it's a great question, and it comes up a lot. and I think it's a good one. You know? Yeah.
Any other questions? Thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Thank you.